Hello. How are you, Stephen? This is another episode of the Edgy Futurist podcast. How are you, my friend?
You sounded real like Peter Kay then.
Did I?
What's it called? Phoenix Knights.
Welcome.
Welcome to the Phoenix Club. What were you called?
The Phoenix is rising. Yes.
Good. I'm good, mate. I've got my old glasses back. We didn't discuss this, Ben. But I couldn't find my glasses anywhere, and I'm thinking, I put my glasses. And my daughter brought them to me. She went, "Found your glasses, Daddy." Must have left them in the room. The biggest scratch. Down, literally, you can't wear it. It's almost like cutting me in half. This bit here. So I'm back to my old glasses. I do like these glasses. They're a bit weird, but I do like them.
Yeah, nice. I've got my second pair on today. I don't know why we've both done that. Yeah. So it's been
borrowed them from Deirdre Rashid. I borrowed mine from Willy Wonka and Harry Potter's dad, and you've borrowed yours from Deirdre Rashid. So we're all going out of celeb tonight, mate. But how's it been? How's everything going?
It's been really good. By the time this goes out, that Schrodinger's cat thing, sorry to mention it again, I'll have been in Bucharest. So I've done that conference out there, speaking in there. So I'm expecting that to have been lots and lots of fun, flying in and out of there, talking about AI and launching some of my new stuff regarding the Ideas Guy stuff that some of you might have seen that I've been doing online. So yeah, that will have been exciting. But it's been brilliant that we've been able to do some cool things as well with some local colleges, supporting them on their digital transformation journey as well. So that's the kind of stuff I love to do, talking to people about where they're trying to go, dreaming about the future, thinking around that. So yeah, it's been good. It's been really good. Have you been up to anything particularly exciting and interesting, Stephen?
Just heavy into projections business-wise. But yeah, I think in a couple of weeks or just after this episode, no, before this episode goes out, I'll have been next week. I'm over in your neck of the woods, I think. So yeah, I'm here, there, and everywhere. Next week's a bit of a crazy week, visiting a lot of FE colleges, some universities, a couple of multi academy trusts, going all the way from Blackpool via York, Sheffield, Leeds, and Rochdale, I think it is, maybe Oldham. So it's a big travel week next week, and then. And then, yeah, do you know what I'm really excited about next week, though, or in the coming weeks, is I'm going to Country to Country Festival.
I knew that were going to come out.
I'm so excited. So excited for it. And country is now mainstream in the UK. Beyonce is taking it to a different level. Wouldn't say that it's diehard country, but it's a good song. But she has country in her roots. Do you know, she's Houston, Texas. So, but other than that, just... back running, got a race, my first race of 2024 coming up. I opted out of the Manchester Marathon and some other bits, but yeah, life's good, mate. Life's good. It's been nice to be just at home, really, generally.
Good. Interestingly, talking about gigs, I've got a few coming up as well. So we were just having a look on the old gig horizon. Got Liam Gallagher coming up soon. We've got Blink coming up soon. We've got Foo Fighters coming up soon. And there's another one that's in the mix. I can't remember what that one was. And then hopefully, fingers crossed, I can get Kings of Leon tickets as well when they come out tomorrow.
Yeah, Friday.
So whenever
Friday,
it is,
I think it is.
Depending on where we are. So I might have got them by the time this goes out live. Hopefully you'll have seen it on socials. We're going to try and get some Kings of Leon.
I've got a random one coming up. As I probably mentioned it on the podcast before, good friend of mine, good school friend, Jimmy. Jimmy is in a band.
Is that one?
Yeah, still going. There's a couple. But I'm going to see them in Nottingham. In August, so I think the lineup. Get this: Razor Light, Feeder, Pigeon Detectives, The Sherlocks.
Right, mate. Why have you not told me about this? Because I've got tickets that I'm giving you for other things. Why have you not told me about this?
When have you get? Yeah, but you've given me tickets in exchange for money, Ben.
Are you not coming to Liam Gallagher? No, were you not coming to that one? I thought you were coming to that one.
No,
are you not? Oh, okay, fine.
No, you've never given me any tickets.
That's fine. That's
I'll come. When is it? When am I coming?
Oh, you're not coming. I'm not invited. Anyway, we're not on here just to have a little joke and conversation and argument about who owns what. Oh, eh? Oh,
thanks for everybody that's already switched off. Appreciate it. If you click back in now, you're just not sure what's going on. Jolly FM.
we just talk shit, don't we? We absolutely just talk shit.
Of course we do. Of course we do. But yeah, it's been a good... We've done one, haven't we, since we broke out into a two rather than the original three. But it's been...
Having a conversation, you mean, yeah?
So us, the Edgy Futurists together, I think we title these strands of the podcast. But it's been a... You know, we have actually recorded miles more than what we're going to talk about. We've done... When I say we, it's the proverbial we. I mean, Ben has done a great job of getting a million guests on. I think I've done one this season, so I'm proud of my one.
You're involved with at least one other. You might not have got them on, but you're involved in trying to...
We're involved in the podcast.
You were there in the background. I don't know if you said anything, but you were there, weren't you?
I was on screen. But yeah, it's been good. I think we started out... Did this section started out with our good friend Lawrence, didn't it?
It was, yeah, it was. We had a really good conversation with Lawrence.
And it delved in. The thing I loved about getting Lawrence back was, I think Lawrence said it on social himself, was he felt like it could be his true self. Lawrence has developed as a person and developed his confidence to really speak openly about, you know, his passions and where he wants to go. And I think what I really loved about the podcast was, yes, it was a bit Lawrence been interviewed, but it was also an opportunity to champion lots of different people that Lawrence and we've worked with, like, you know, Sammy got a mention, John Neal got a mention, Conrad got a mention, and there were so many different other people in there, but we were talking about championing others, not only speaking the names of others when they're there, but also championing the people that aren't there. So, you know, that whole thing of, you know, just don't look busy when somebody's watching. Don't do good when just somebody notices. That constant bit of, you know, if you're really a champion for other people, champion regardless of what room that you're in, and believe in it because you believe in them. So constantly do it when it's the right forum. And I think that was one of the things that came out, that how important it is to champion others.
Agreed. Yeah. And I think that both of us were in Dublin in November, the Google Champion Symposium. And one of the things that we heard there from a lot of the conversations was about how you champion other people and how you bring other people into a conversation. We know that you've mentioned already, Sammy talked about that, and we talked about that with Lawrence in that conversation. But it's really been about how do we authentically have those conversations about other people to talk them up, because it's very, very easy for us as people who are, particularly for me, for self-employed space, I could try and steal everything that would be useful for me, potentially, or could I try and make this about me, or we are very much in that space around talking around future technology, education, all the space that goes with that. And lots of people want to be involved in that conversation. And if we're not careful, it's very, very easy for us to think, well, maybe I'm speaking for myself, but I presume I'm speaking for both of us. It's very, very easy for us to believe in our own echo chamber, believe our own hype. And I've just finished reading a brilliant book by Ryan Holiday that's called Ego is the Enemy. And it's that idea that we make it about ourselves. And actually, the true form of leadership, the true form of effective change is not about whether you are doing particularly well. It's about who else is coming with you. I've said it before, if you want to consider whether you're a leader or not, the John Maxwell thing, take a look behind you. If nobody's following, you're just taking a walk. So that idea that we've got to lead conversations, but leading conversations for the benefit of other people. I've been very, very fortunate that people have brought me into rooms that I should not have been in that room. I probably wasn't qualified enough to be in that room. I certainly wasn't professional enough or courteous enough or wearing the right clothes or speaking the right language. But people brought me in and took a punt on me. I think we talked about this a lot, didn't we, Steve, on that conversation with Lawrence, that it's not about... in fact, actually, echoes a conversation we had with John Neal early on, that it's not enough for us to just be... sounding our own trumpet. We've got to We've got to help other people up that ladder, and that's the only way for this to be sustainable over a long time.
Yeah, and I think authentic leadership, authentic, just being authentic just in everything, I think is something that we should all adhere to. Doing the right things. I've had the real luxury of working with some wonderful people for a long period of time. Sammy was one of those, another wonderful guy called Ian Thompson, who now is at the ATF and is absolutely smashing it, and many, many more. And at times, it would have been absolutely wonderful to keep those individuals and keep them where they were. But ultimately, as just the way that I view things, I was like, just unfair. Ultimately, those people were destined, whether they saw it or not, for massive things. And for them not to be supported, if I can't give them something that they need because they were ready for it, then ultimately it's just better to let those people develop elsewhere. And I think many organisations and many industries and many sectors really struggle with that. Yeah. They say, well, it's going to be really difficult to bring new people in. And I was like, absolutely fine. But it's the right thing to do.
Of course it is. And it's okay. There's okay if people fly further than you do. That's all right as well. And I think some of that is tied into that ego of not being wanting to be beaten. I think you've nailed that, I think, for a long time. I think even though Sammy ribs you and takes the piss out of you, she knows that you gave her opportunities, and she knows that, and she's grateful for that. And I think she's doing the same thing for other people and opening doors, and she's led and she leads by opening doors for other people. I know there's people that are doing the same. Darren White, you look at some of the people that Darren's bringing through. Like you said, Ian Thompson, been a supporter of what we've done for as long as we can remember, and he's doing big things in that more policy space because somebody opened the door for him, and then also didn't keep the back door locked so that they couldn't get out. You kind of went, do you know what? Yeah, I think that's lovely. And I think talking about championing others, it's kind of nice to be able to talk about Kevin in this space as well. So I know we had Kevin on episode 229. Some of you will have remember Kevin, the Californian who lives in South Africa, on an English podcast, which was a little bit interesting. And he's another one of those people who that he's long in the tooth. I'm not saying anything he hasn't said. He celebrated a big birthday, which he doesn't like to talk about, but I've mentioned it again. He's another one who he's trying to bring people through and help them to fly the nest and champions others. So those of us that get to go out to South Africa, I know people like Abid and Georgina and myself and Katie and others who are very, very grateful that somebody took a punt on us to go out and do that kind of stuff. So that level, that theme of speaking other people's names and championing others and bringing others through is definitely a theme of some of the stuff that we've talked about, right?
Yeah, I totally believe it. And I think bringing people together for the greater good.
Yeah.
I suppose... like, you know, putting on events, bringing things together, trying to move things forward in partnership with an example of Kevin is, you know, Kevin is a competitor, but he's another partner in the Google space, and I work in that sector. But there's no compete there. You know, Kevin's a really, really good guy. We share a lot of insights. He's really knowledgeable. He's been at it for a long, long time and has helped me. And I've had some good conversations, and I think that's just the thing. And I remember quite a while ago, and somebody said, oh, I love the tech sector. I've not really come across many so-and-sos, many, I don't know, they used a bit of a naughty word, but we don't like to swear on the podcast. So I said, there's not many come across. And I was like, is it the fact that those people don't exist, or is it the fact that we've, through our positive nature, sometimes we do get on the negative side about the doom and gloom of education and why it has to change. But generally, positivity seeks positivity, brought together by kind of like-minded backers from a diverse background. But ultimately, is it the fact that those people don't exist in this space, or is it the fact that actually, you know, we kind of repel them because they probably know that they wouldn't fit in because they're not nice people. Maybe that's the consideration I had. And I was reading some articles and listening to podcasts. I never remember the books and I never remember the podcast. My memory is shocking. I'm seeking help for it. Hopefully I don't get dementia, but I can't remember anything, but I remember snippets. And when I think about this, and it was talking about positivity, and it was, I do remember the book, Kevin Sinfield's book, The Legend, Sir Kevin Sinfield.
He's not sir, but it should be.
We call him Sir and King Kev in these quarters. But he talked about, like, you know, you're as strong as the five people around you and that you spend the most time with. And a shout out to you, Ben, because we drove down, we won't talk about it in detail, but we drove somewhere, didn't we, the other week, a long, long journey to do some work with the Edge of Futurists. I think it was like 10 or 11 hours. And you drive me. Your work ethic is astronomical. Sometimes to your downfall, because you're a workaholic at times, but your ethic and your work, attention to detail and everything else is absolutely brilliant and drives me to improve. So this is the thing where we spend quite a bit of time together. I'd say you're one of my five. How did that happen, Ben?
That's kind of easy. Right. I think I'd say the same.
And I think you raise up the quality work, and then you think about some other people, you know, and everything else. And I think I've been thinking over the last couple of weeks, you know, who do I surround myself with? And as you get older and longer the tooth, like I have, Ben, you are this year as well. Celebrating a big birthday, everybody's Ben this year. Remind him.
I'm 30.
Yeah, 30. And
plus
11 years. Plus that. Ultimately, your circle becomes smaller, but you really reflect yourself in your circle as well. I don't know where I was going with that, but
I think you're absolutely bang on, mate. I think what we're saying is that in terms of bringing other people through and actually not having a competitive element, and, like, don't get me wrong, We have laugh and joke. It's not even competitive with regards to football at the moment because my team are absolutely awful. Your team look like they're going to go back up into the Premier League. But the competitive nature in us as blokes is definitely there. But it's about knowing where the competition is about, because I know that in my mind we're on the same team. So if I'm competing against... if I'm competing against others who are in this space, the only people that lose are either students or people that we're working with, and so that absolutely is there's no benefit to doing that. And actually, we end up losing because we end up pulling against each other rather than pulling together. I think that idea of having your five around you, that I imagine that Kevin Sinfield mentioned that in like the concept of a scrum and from a rugby perspective, because if you're not in tight in with those people and you're not pulling in the same direction, we watched it in the Six Nations, if anybody's watched that recently, like when you haven't got like a synergy between the two props and they're not pushing in the same direction, you end up going the wrong way around, and you end up going around in a circle or a semicircle depending on before the ref blows it. And so, like, if you're not pushing in the same direction and not pushing with the same force and you've not got that same level of drive, then you're gonna end up causing damage and end up losing anyway. So I've been very, very fortunate, the fact that I've got people in my world, I include you in that, Steve, who do push that drive. And I think, as we've been talking about in the podcast, like, somebody like Kevin in your corner has championed many of us. Somebody like John Neal in our corner, for both of us, has been somebody who's championed us and spoken good over us. Andy Caffrey early on did the similar thing. You've done the same for Sammy, and you've done the same for Ian, and you've done the same for multiple other people in that space as well. And I'd like to think that there'll be people that'll be listening to this be thinking, yeah, these two lads have been in my corner and they've championed us. And ultimately, the whole principle of why we do the podcast, right? Like, there's other things we could be doing on an evening. There's other things that we can be doing in terms of time and effort and cost, and because it doesn't come for free. And we choose to do this because what we're trying to do is bring something that helps other people. We started this out as teachers helping teachers because we all were teachers at the time. Teachers helping teachers. And that's evolved because we're not always necessarily teachers, but we are passionate about education, passionate about helping others. And why we do the awards, why we do the events that we do. Why? Because we know that what we've got to do, we can talk about the system being this and the Tories doing this and the shit of Ofsted and the shit of exams and the shit of this and the shit of that. But ultimately, there's millions of people around the world who really do give a shit about what really matters in education. They're in our team and we're in their team. And that's the reason why we have the Wolfpack, right?
Yeah, well, I said I didn't want to say a dirty word. You've just said it five times in one sentence. So, you...
We could just put an E on it. We could put an E on this episode. It's all right. I feel like
explicit,
I needed it.
Very explicit? You know, saying shit five times in a sentence, I think that's very explicit.
Is it? Yeah, maybe. I love the fact that you whispered shit like then. It was a little bit like when you say naughty word. Kids are down there. Right, okay, yeah.
Kids might be out there. Can't say those words. Kids are picking up. Ella's picking up, telling Ollie. Ollie's then repeating it, everything that was here. Can't really understand him. He's only two, but he's like... Ollie's like Harry Enfield. Do you know that sketch where that is like... Rah, 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 and then you will one word. But yeah, that's what he's like at the minute. He's like...
If that one word is shit, that would be quite funny.
It probably is. But yeah, and that leads us on to... It's this synergy. It's like we've planned this, Ben, but we never plan anything.
Don't say we never plan anything. I do plan this.
Everything. I plan it just in a different way. You know, my whole life is in my day job is planning meticulous elements that I just don't want to plan. I just don't want to do that. You know, outside of that day job. So is the conversation we had with Ed Kerwin again. You know, it's great to have him back on the podcast, and Helen Demetriou about empathy, went through the depth of, you know, what empathy actually is, you know, what's the difference between empathy and sympathy and all those kind of things. And I think that I think empathetic leadership, authentic leadership, and just as a person is just, I'm going to get it wrong here, but that, you know, that understanding of empathy, of trying to not put yourself in somebody else's shoes. That's not what we talked about, that actually being as inappropriate. And that really isn't the thing what we should be doing. But it's that understanding of trying to do things, trying to understand different angles and different approaches and different opinions and everything else. And I think it was that as a key skill really stands out to me. You know, I've been really thinking about, you know, the work that Ed did, but also what I loved is Helen really bringing the research element into it.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. That, you know, she to Cambridge.
Yeah.
At Cambridge. I was going to say Oxford then. I was getting confused, but just that real embedded research of the importance of empathy, a skill that can be taught, not just something that you're born with and, oh, we can't do it now, we haven't got enough time to focus on it, but also that research article that Helen talked about, the fact that by focusing on that and developing that through a different approach to teaching and development of our young people, that also that stimulates a growth in their creativity as well.
Yeah.
And that brilliant.
I think that ties into the idea that what we heard in that conversation is that empathy is a skill that can be developed. You might not be born that way. You might not naturally be somebody who is empathetic. You might not be somebody who sees other people's perspectives or picks up emotion and understands other people's feelings, but it is something that can be taught, and it's something that should be taught. And obviously the work that Ed and the team have been doing after this goes out, this week they've been going through that space around Empathy Week and all the stories that have gone out there. Because interestingly, that phrase around storytelling, which is something that John talked about on one of our first episodes, he said the skill of the future is going to be storytelling. And then Ed and the team at Empathy Week have been telling other people's stories in order to develop the skill of empathy. Because if you can start to feel what other people are feeling, and not just feeling sorry for them or pity, which is empathy, but feeling that sympathy, sorry, but that feeling of a connectedness and an understanding that moves you into compassion, which is the next element. I think that is really powerful, because we move away from being somebody who sees somebody as other and chooses that I am better than you, so therefore I'll feel sorry for you, or almost has that ego thing again that we've mentioned a few times, that somehow, like, because I'm different from you, I'm not experienced. Actually being in the mud with them, being in the awareness of them, but acknowledging I can't feel exactly what you feel, but I can feel what I feel about what you felt. So we one of the things that I really loved in the conversations with both Helen and with Ed there is that we can't feel that. And it ties back to the thing with Lawrence, actually. We can't feel what it feels like to be discriminated against because I'm black, or I can't feel what it must be like to have lived in a war-torn country and be a woman with the Taliban as a white female journalist in that space. Like, I can't feel that because I can't, but I can feel what it feels like for me to hear your feelings and to understand that perspective, and it helps us to have that position of and I think it is a position of humility. I listened to Will Storr on Joe Rogan's podcast recently. Well worth a listen if you've not listened to it. And Will Storr, he's written a few books. One of them's called Selfie. Another one's called The Art of Storytelling. And he's written one called The Status Game. And phenomenal 2.5 hour conversation. And in that conversation, they're talking about this idea of an awareness of self and how many people don't change their perspective at any point. And how many people have thought this about a group of people or felt this about a certain issue and have never shifted on that in their whole life. There's been no critical thinking. There's been no awareness. There's been no perspective shifting. And actually, that's really, really dangerous as a position, that you never, ever falter away, never question your beliefs. And from somebody who's come from a relatively strict religious upbringing and therefore believed what I've been taught as what's been given me, it's only when I start to maybe step outside of that a little bit and look at it from an outside perspective, not to deny them. I still believe a lot of the stuff that I believed, but there are some very fundamental things that I believed were absolute truths that I'm not entirely sure about anymore. And that has come from, if I'm honest, a positioning of a humbling of my own ego, being wrong multiple times, acknowledging I'm wrong, and then thinking, okay, what do I need to learn and what other people can help me think differently in that space. It comes back to the five, doesn't it? It comes back to other people helping you think differently, right?
Yeah. And I think allowing different opinions, talk about ego, talk about those different things, but also allowing difference of opinion. I think often I see people using conflict, and I know conflict in terms of war and all those kind of things, but it's attributed to that word of a real negative thing, where actually I believe positive conflict in business and in friendships and relationships, that because if you constantly agree, then ultimately, you know, you don't really seek and change anything, because you're just constantly on a different trajectory with somebody's support. Where I think positive conflict and listening to different opinions, you might not agree, but reflecting and listening, which is another thing that we've discussed often this season on the podcast, the ability to ask the right questions, but also when you're asking a question, you've got to be able to listen. Because what's the point in asking a question? I think you posted about this, Ben. Do you know, if you're asking a question and not listening, then you've got a problem. Because if you're always talking, you're only hearing what you already know anyway.
It's listening for confirmation rather than listening for understanding. And I think there's that is most of the time listening to wait to speak. Like, is a thought process that somebody like me, and I think probably because of my own. So, I often find myself jumping into conversations and saying, "Oh yeah, yeah, I remember a time like this," or "Oh yeah, that was like this when I spoke to this person." And actually, when I reflect on that, that probably tied into my own ADHD anyway, because it is part of that element. So I am picking that up. But I also know that there is something in that mix around. It shows a wanting to speak rather than wanting to listen is a mentality shift of, do you know what happens if I don't speak in this conversation? I hate silence, right? I hate awkward silence. Like, if I'm waiting for somebody to speak, one of my best mates, who I know you know, Steve, one of my best mates is an absolute introvert. And we can be having a conversation. I can ask him a question. And he just will be thinking. Now, I think and verbally, like external thinking, or saying verbally, so I speak it out as I'm working out my answer. Literally right now, I'm working it out as I'm speaking rather than pausing and then coming up with an answer. He doesn't do that. So I fill gaps. And actually, I'm not really listening. I really want to help and ask here because I care about the person and I care about their thoughts. And I actually am a naturally inquisitive, curious guy, right? And I'd like to think that I'm a caring person who gives a shit about people. But sometimes it can come across where I'm not listening like that. And interesting, one of the conversations that came out of those discussions with Ed and Helen is actually sometimes it's okay just to not have an answer and not to speak. It's okay to go, I have no idea how that feels. And that's okay. But I want you to know, I have no idea how that feels, but I hear you and I'm here. There's something powerful in that space, right? There's something really, really powerful in that space of being a person who goes, I have no idea what you're going through. I don't want to try and understand and say that I feel this and it's like this and it was like that. Just go, I don't know what it feels like to feel like that, but I want you to know I'm with you and I'm feeling for you in that space, and I'll be here for what you need.
Yeah, I think it's the difference between, I suppose, in some way, the way that I relate that to is the difference between mentoring and coaching. Mentoring is often offering an opinion and saying how you've done it or how you would do it and guiding people, where by direction and giving examples and information, whereas coaching is often asking questions, often listening and constantly pushing back to, can you just give me a bit more on that, or, you know, let's explore what you mean by that process and why do you think that. There's, and you've done it, Ben, I've never been coached by you, but you're doing a lot of coaching at the minute for a lot of programs you're doing. It's a difficult skill, isn't it, coaching? And I think there's a real muddle of the difference between mentoring and coaching. And I suppose empathy and having empathy is a real skill and a massive skill that's needed for coaching. And I don't think enough leaders in education have the ability to understand. And have they ever been coached themselves? Is that something that we aspire and really develop in our leaders in the sector, to be able to coach other people? Because teachers do it well. But
I don't think there's anybody who. Yeah, it's not an explicit in our teaching standards. It's certainly not explicit in any leadership standards, although it's kind of implicit in the terms of understanding team and culture and an awareness of others and self-awareness and other awareness. That always comes up in conversations about leadership. But interestingly, you mentioned that about coaching. Like, I have started in my coaching conversation, because you can imagine, anybody who's listened to this for any length of time, not just this podcast, but any podcast that I'm involved with, it's I can't shut up. And my wife's like, is there any times, she says this at home, is there any times where you can just not talk? Just, you don't need to talk. You don't need to fill every gap. Like she laughs, we laugh. And because actually she does love me. We have been together 20 years. I think she does anyway. No, she does. But it's not, empathy is not part of natural play. So in my coaching, I've had to literally teach myself not to answer what I'm thinking. So if I'm thinking something, I write it down. So on all my coaching conversations, I'm writing stuff down all the way through, so that rather than me saying it and feeling like I need to give an opinion and mentor that person through that, I write it down. And then I go, so what I'm hearing is you saying this. I don't know if it's worth me sharing something from my perspective and as a mentoring idea in this space. Would that be useful? And asking for permission in that space for me to be able to share something. And then they never go, no, but I need to make sure I don't just do that all the time, because it's not about me getting my point across and making them feel what I'm feeling. Actually, I need to coach them to understand, to come to a solution that they want to. So yeah, I don't know if anybody has written a book. I know that Tony Robbins talked around the empathetic leadership style, and lots of people talk about empathetic leadership, but I haven't seen a book yet. Maybe that's a book you could write, Steve.
Me writing would be an interesting thing to know.
Just speak it. Speak it.
I know.
Yeah, that's what you need to do.
Ego. So my ego is probably stopping me from writing. My ego is, nobody's going to read it, mate. Don't waste your time, is my ego. But yeah, it's an interesting one, I guess, isn't it? And I think I'm just trying to think of empathetic. I'm not sure, but I think it's authentic leadership. Maybe the Brené Brown stuff rather than, empathetic. Yeah. Daring greatly and Dare to Lead. Absolutely fantastic books. By Brené Brown, talking about your honesty and all those kind of things. I'm just trying to think of, and again, some of the things around radical candor, but I think that's more, rather than empathetic, I think it's more, when we talked about sitting in silence, don't know if anybody's ever taken that approach. I think it's the book from the great leader Kim Scott from her time at Netflix. And Radical Candor is a wonderful book where I said, right, I'm going to try and adapt it in terms of my keep in touch meetings that I have with my team and things that I've done for a long period of time, where I say, tell me a bit about myself. I want you to tell me. I want you to tell me, and I'm going to listen to how I can be better. And some people go, you can't be better. And I'm like, I live with myself. I've spent time with myself. I know I definitely can be better. So you tell me how I can be better, or we'll sit in silence. You'd hate it, Ben. But just sitting there for a long period of time until they get that I actually mean it. And we're going to sit on a call for a long period of time until they tell me about myself. Because once they understand that I am allowing them to tell me about myself, not critical, saying, Steve, look at your glasses, and Steve, look at your beard, and Steve, and this, and you've been... doing it in a derogatory way, in a negative way.
And wearing socks. Wearing socks.
Yeah, that's always one. It's always one, isn't it? But like that whole thing of, you've done this, Steve, and that was really difficult because this is the effect it had on my work. And also, but I love the fact that you did this, or that's the real. And that's something that I use on a regular basis. That, and it links back to Brené Brown and everything else. And that whole thing is clear as kind. It's not about the person. I need people to tell me about feedback so they can be open to receive feedback themselves, because I just wanted to explain to them that, this is how I receive it. Feedback is something that we seek, so we can have a greater understanding of other people's opinions. And if I didn't sit there and listen and take that feedback, I would have no understanding of how they feel by my decisions and my actions. So I suppose that is empathy, because I'm trying to understand by some of my actions, what are the consequences of some of the actions, negatively or positively, I guess. And maybe people are going to be listening and going, that doesn't make sense. But that's how I'm trying to relate it back to. that it really does. I'm trying to explain that to those individuals that it's a bridge we're building. And I'm not criticizing you as a person. What I'm saying is, if we continue to build in this way, the bridge is gonna fail and cars are gonna fall into the water. That's what I'm trying to achieve. And it's never personal. That's the approach that we're trying to take, but people really struggle with radical candor.
Of course they do. And I think the other thing that ties into that is you can have radical candor, and I know that Kim Scott talks about this, but you can have radical candor when you've built relationship. Like, it's very, very difficult to go in and do radical candor with somebody that you've never met before. Yes, you can do it, but it takes a special kind of person to be able to go, to be able to do that. And another book that ties into that, from one that you recommended to me, actually, Steve, that I read a few years ago, which is that $1 trillion Coach, which talks about Bill Campbell, who obviously coached some of the craziest big names, Larry Page, Steve Jobs, others, who he was in that space with these big CEOs, and they all talked about the fact that they wouldn't have been able to do it without Bill. And Bill actually helped them to see things, and he loved them, and he was in their world, and he gave one about them. But more importantly, he said what needed to be said to people who didn't have other people around them that were saying what needed to be said, because they were so powerful. And I think there is that level of empathy that ties to that. And then more broadly about saying what needs to be said, has been a running theme that comes through these last few episodes. In fact, actually, I think that more broadly through the season, we've talked about saying what needs to be said, being who you need to be. And this is kind of moving away from what we used to do as the Edgy Futurist, which was about the future of education and about technology and about this and that and the other. But more importantly, that skill of empathy that we develop in young people is preparing young people and learners for the future, because we're talking about things that really matter. Does it matter whether they can get a 5 on their GCSE English? Possibly. Does it matter more whether they can relate to people that are different from them in that space? Absolutely. Does it matter whether they can communicate effectively? Yes, it does. Does it matter whether they can label the angles on a triangle? And I mean, like, surely there's a place for both. It's not either or. But if we're to make a decision about what really matters, and I think that brings us really, really nicely. Look at this. This is segue like never before. This is a brilliant segue into episode 231 with Will Goldsmith, who's a head teacher at headmaster at Beedale School, where we talked about schooling be about more than results, and it being, they obviously have radically shifted what they're doing in terms of scaling down the use of GCSEs as terminal and high stakes assessment. That is not getting rid of or scrapping GCSEs, despite the noise that's been made on the internet, that they are scaling them down and suggesting that there's some things that might be better to learn than being forced to go through a curriculum to jump through hoops in terms of the numbers in the UK. And I think what that means, what that's saying to me, is that there are brave souls out there, brave headmasters, brave chairs of governors, brave educators that are going, And I know that we mentioned in the chat, we mentioned in that conversation, and we've mentioned multiple times in different forums, not least I mention it on pretty much every person's LinkedIn page who has the audacity to say, well, we can break away from the system and we can do this and we can do that. I go, yeah, it's all right for you in an independent school, because we don't have that flexibility within the mainstream system. But what is exciting is that people are willing to do something a little bit different, right? So when it comes to being leaders, we can do things different, but also what we can do for our learners, we can do something different.
Yeah, and I think we can change the system right now. Will we be able to get there, change the system? People have been fighting against trying to change the system for a long period of time. Bob Harrison has been at it and retired. And he's enjoying his retirement. Hopefully catch up with him soon. But he was at it for a long period of time, and trying to change the system is like trying to nail jelly to the wall and herd cats or whatever, push water uphill, whatever you want to call it. But ultimately, I think the new season of the Edufuturist podcast is not just about developing value beyond knowledge, like, you know, focusing on skills, focusing on the holistic learner, but also by developing people, developing teachers, developing students, but also developing leaders that have an understanding of that. So actually, pockets of outstanding practice that break away and try and move things forward within the shackles of the current system, and at least evolve it before the revolution happens is one thing. And Will was in state education, taught in state education for a long period of time before he found his home. And I love the fact that he talked about family and his community that he's got at Beedale. But yeah, do you know the thing with, and it's, we've both taught in FE, haven't we, Ben? And you're not Sir, you're Steve or you're Ben or you're whoever. And in schools, teachers and staff wear ties and or maybe they don't wear ties anymore, but they wear shirts and they wear trousers and they wear a jacket and probably wear a tie, you know, to distinguish who they are. And then they're trying to demonstrate that they're different to the kids. I'm like, what models that does that create? I work in industry, and I've never wore a tie to work in the 3 years I've been leading the company. You know, I haven't. So what does that say about what industry is now? You know, Ben, we were having a conversation. We won't go into too much, but, you know, people always have this opinion of what industry is, what industry uses, what industry needs, what it is, what happens in industry. But what are they judging it on? We're judging education and developing these children and our young people. And Beedale is a testament to what else can be done based on what model? Based on factories or based on a world of work that doesn't exist anymore for many businesses. Do you know, we need to get with the times. You're preparing them for something that is no longer there.
Yeah.
In a museum.
Yeah, agreed. We are very much suggesting it's not just a systemic issue. We do need to do things at the chalk face, and that's why we celebrate the people at the chalk face. Let me reiterate that we are not at the people at the chalk face. We celebrate them, we champion them, we give them awards, we create content like this for people at the chalk face so that it can help, and we're kind of championing that stuff. But systemically, we do need to have a real think. And interestingly, what Will talked about in that space, I was led to reminded of something that my dad shared. My dad's was a primary school teacher until this time last year, actually. He retired at 64. And he'd been a year two teacher for as long as I can remember, probably 20 years or so. He shared that thing, that's what's attributed to Einstein, whether he said it or not, is that if you judge a fish by its ability to climb a tree, it's going to grow its whole life thinking it's stupid, which is what I think you were talking about there, Steve. It's that idea that if we're judging people who are not designed to sit exams in that way or retaining knowledge for the sake of passing a 2-hour qualification, then to say whether they've learned that or they're now workplace ready because they've got that number, I think we're missing a point, right? I think we're missing a point in saying, we're making this about something that it isn't, and we're making something, we're trying to pigeonhole, there's lots of animal references here, we're trying to pigeonhole young people and learners, and I know that not everybody who's listening to this will be having young people, so learners at whatever level, into a mold that is just not fit for purpose. I have been involved with an organization recently, which will remain nameless, and they're talking about getting students ready for the workplace. Okay. And so in that conversation where they were getting students ready for the workplace, they were talking about rules and they were talking about compliance and they were talking about discipline and they were talking about order and behavior management and yes, and doing what they're told. So the reason why we have those rules in place are so that people, so that young people do what they're told. So when they go into the workplace, they will do what they're told, which is all well and good. If you want to create a compliant people, like you say, work in a factory, Steve, who do as they're told from the man in a tie and a suit. But if you're increasingly going into a space where you need people to show initiative and you need people to think differently, then actually compliance is the worst thing that can happen. So if you're just creating compliant people who need to be spoon-fed, who need to be told what to do and have zero initiative, and then just do what they need to do because they've been told what to do, then we can't solve the problems in our world in the same way or using the same tools as what created them. And what created that was that factory-based model. Interestingly, another organization I was working in, I went in a jumper and jeans and a t-shirt today in that organization, and somebody laughed with me and went, where's your shirt and tie? I was like, well, the people who run the world don't wear shirts and ties, do they, mate? And he looked at me, he went, yeah, the Prime Minister wears shirts and tie. And I went, exactly, he don't run the world, does he? He's just told by people who wear jeans and t-shirt what he needs to say. No,
let's base an opinion of whether you need to wear a shirt and a tie based on one of the most long-standing systems. The problem is change ever. Let's judge that. But it's often when I was still in education, somebody just said, why are you not wearing a suit and a tie today? Or no, it wasn't. Why are you not wearing a suit and a shirt? And I said, why are you wearing fancy dress? And they got really offended. I was like, your opinion is absolutely great, but I'm here hopefully for my ideas and what I bring to the table. If that's terrible, please tell me and you can have an opinion on that. But because I'm wearing a t-shirt and I wasn't wearing any socks and I had roll-up trousers, I was like, we'll probably get off on the wrong foot because that's just... do those people even think that's the right thing to do now, or do they just do it because they've always done it, which is a concern? And it does link to the last thing that I mentioned about Will, when he talked about bringing his authentic self into work and into life. And Will, openly gay man, married a wonderful guy, don't know him, but the reason I think he's wonderful is because he's from Yorkshire. So everybody's wonderful in Yorkshire. And basically just said how been bringing that self and his authentic self into work really helps with actually everything about what he's trying to achieve. So I think that was a really powerful thing in terms of your authentic self. And I don't see and that's not how I feel comfortable. And I think if you feel comfortable, you're more likely to really thrive.
Don't get me wrong. Don't get me wrong. When I was in that space, I quite liked a fancy tie or two. I had a few funky ones, and I did not them ones that played songs and that. I weren't that guy. I weren't that RE teacher who had like Bible verses on his tie or anything. But I did like a good shirt, tie, suit job. But interestingly, how freeing it is to be in that space. I think we've got a great opportunity to change that space and not force learners into a model and a mode that this has been the way it's always been. It's been a good conversation. It's been a good set of conversations. I know we've got some big ones coming up. We might as well tell some of them, Steve. We've got a short interview. It wasn't a long one. We got opportunity to speak with the leader of the Chartered College of Teaching in the UK, Dame Alison Peacock. That was a great conversation where she was letting us give a bit. She gave us a bit of an insight into the future of education, didn't she? So that was an absolute belter. From a heavyweight, an absolute heavyweight, somebody that's very, very well respected in the education space. So yeah, that was good.
Yeah, we've got Matt Bromley and why can I not remember?
Andy Griffith.
Oh, terrible. The working
classroom.
School. Classroom. This is my life. I can't remember anything. I have to write it down. I've got a million things here. But yeah, the working classroom, talking about bringing working class families, working class communities back into different things. Really exciting. Coming from that background myself. So yeah, it was really, really good. Great conversation. We also, while we were interviewing on the same day, we did a busy day that day, didn't we? So we had Matt Bromley and Andy Griffiths. We obviously interviewed Dame Alison Peacock. We also interviewed a great panel at the Haberdashers Multi-Academy Trust for their Professional Development Day, something that we're now starting to do. If you're listening and you're putting a professional development day on and you want some podcasts and you want some interviews with your guests, reach out to us. We're not that expensive and we're more than happy to support. But that was a really good conversation from from a variety and a good mix, talking about culture, community, and how we're better together and how we need to start to break down some of those barriers and discuss things from all stakeholders, which was a great conversation. We've got some others coming up. And by the time this goes out, hopefully we'll have a confirmation. We're working behind the scenes out with Ben to try and get our 2024 event and awards going. Just waiting for some confirmation from some venues and then we can announce it. We're excited to be bringing it back into 2024. It will happen in 2024, guaranteed. It's just whether it'll happen in this academic year or whether it'll be in the next, but we're praying, we're hoping that it will be in by the end of this academic year in 2024. So it's exciting.
If you've got to this end or this far into the podcast and you haven't turned us off, thank you. Watch this space for announcements around the Uprising 2024, how to book on, get your tickets. Or if you are in that space where you're looking to partner with that in terms of awards or partnership and sponsorship, you're very, very welcome to reach out to us, info@edgeoffuturist.com, or just drop us a little message on X or on LinkedIn or whatever else you can find us. And we'd love to have a conversation about partnering and getting you guys involved. It's going to be epic. I'm absolutely sure of that. Looking forward to getting the details out very, very soon. It's been a good conversation, this. Edge of Futures Together, part two. I think we need to change the name from Edge of Futures Together, because there's only two of us. I think we need to change it. So if anybody's got any suggestions of what we could call it, Edge of Futurist Duo, Edge of Futurist Duet. Now that's gone. We could be that, couldn't we? No, maybe not. Whatever it is.
Still exists.
But is it not Gemini? I don't know.
Don't even get me started. That's been today's task.
It's been an absolute belt.
It has. And catch you all soon.
Thank you for listening.